Namaste and in La Ketch, and welcome to this episode of One World in a New World. And I am Zen Benefiel, your host. As always, I'm going to reaffirm what those two phrases mean. Namaste comes from the Sanskrit, spoken it's Brahmi, and it means the divine in me recognizes the divine in you. In La Ketch comes from the Mayan civilization, and it simply means I am another you. So isn't that interesting? Here's two ancient phrases that we've forgotten and we don't apply those today. Maybe we need to. Imagine what that would do if you approached everyone you know on the street, your friends, neighbors, even people you don't know, with that kind of attitude where you're respectful, honorable, and loving, right? What would that do for them? I don't know. Try it out. Test it. See what kind of results you get. All right, this week's guest is Nicholas Perrin. Nicholas is a very interesting gentleman that has been in some really cool worlds, from the very concrete corporate variety to the very community-oriented and not necessarily less esoteric, but of a much different ilk in consciousness. He's the intuitive coach and facilitator. He's an inspirational speaker. He's the founder and inspirational change agent for Lionheart Coaching, which he's been doing for several years. He was also a co-founder of Wealth Stewards, which is an educational and community building organization around cryptocurrency and how it can be used to benefit others in life, and specifically nonprofits. And a long time ago, maybe not too long ago, because he's not that old, he was a corporate action supervisor for JP Morgan Chase. And he's got a degree from the, and I hope I don't butcher this, I can't even say butcher, Macquarie University. And he graduated with a degree in business administration and information technology. So Nicholas, welcome. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks so much, Zen. You didn't butcher it too much, although there's another degree, which was a Bachelor of Accounting as well.
Beaner.
But all good. Yeah, lovely to be on the show.
Absolutely. You know, if you guys couldn't count stuff, we wouldn't know where we sat, right?
Yeah.
Well, cool. Absolutely. Thanks again for coming. So, you know, we've had a few conversations before this, and you really a deeply intuitive and spiritually aligned man that also has a great skill set to put in play. Now, early on, I'm sure you probably had no idea what you were doing, but there were some times that, or were going to do anyway, that there was probably a process that you went through that had kind of an introduction into the inner space and your inner awareness and how that fit into the outer world and things like that. What was that like for you, and you know, how did that evolve? What did you experience? What was your experience like?
Yeah, thanks, Sam. So just straight off the bat, I did not come into this life awakened, anything like that. I think was just a very normal person that had a very normal kind of childhood, wasn't aware of anything at all. However, things started to change in the latter part of my teens. That was when it's very, very gently certain things started to happen. So there were a few key significant challenges that I went through that got me to realize that maybe there's more to life. So I will share a couple of those, because they're a little bit weird. They're a little bit weird, and maybe other people might be able to relate to them as well.
Well, weird doesn't necessarily mean bad. You know, the actual definition is that it has this supernatural air to it.
Yeah, definitely. So the very first initiation that I had to face was around my sexuality. So by the time I got to my late teens, having come from a very religious background, very defined belief systems, I was very well aware that I was facing a conflict. And essentially the conflict was, do I allow myself to be true to myself and allow myself to explore this part of me that I've been told was bad? Or do I deny it and try and fit in to a persona of what other people think I should be? And I remember there was this very defining moment for me where I was driving over the Harbour Bridge, which is like the, one of the main bridges in Sydney. And I just had to, I remember making a decision while I was driving. I was like, would I be prepared to live a lie so to please other people? Or do I go on a journey and accept the reality that I may lose everything I have, but at least I'm being truthful to myself? That was the decision. I was like, that's what I need to be willing to go through.
That's a tough choice too.
It was a tough choice because there was a possibility that my family could have just said, see you later, bye. So I had to accept that as a possibility. I wasn't sure, but I had to accept that could happen.
Mm-hmm.
And when I really sat with it, a part of me was like, that's the decision. That's the right decision to make. You need to be okay with that. And so what happened was I was very fortunate to, through synchronicity, to find a very powerful spiritual medium who was able to channel different beings. And I did come to her and I said to her, look, how do I reconcile what I'm feeling inside me and what religions are saying to be true? Like, how does this reconcile? And she took me through a very interesting process where she said to me, what do you think unconditional love is? And I sat with it and the penny really dropped and I went, oh, wow. So I've been in a reality that has been based on conditional love. Mm-hmm. It's condition. It's not unconditional. And she basically said, there is a very big difference between rules, structures, belief systems, and ideas that humans create, right? And then a universal truth. And she says, part of the process you're going through is to recognize the difference. And so what I then realized for myself was I can allow my family to believe, they can believe in whatever they want. And the opportunity for me is to not actually take it personally because it's just their belief system about me that is creating that experience for them. And that's actually got nothing to do with me. That's their business. And so I ended up going through that process. It was a difficult process. Half the side of my family were cool with it. The other part of the family were not so cool with it. And again, that had a whole interesting, you know, interesting journey because, for example, there was a 6-month period where I didn't have communication with my mother. She had to go through her own process, but she ended up being diagnosed with cancer probably about 6 months after I shared that with her. And then that was a whole catalyst because then, you know, she had to kind of think about, do I want to have a relationship or not? And because now she was being faced with death as a reality and going through that whole process, it was a whole different ball game. And yeah, it was an enormous process for me. So I think my sexuality was definitely a very, very significant catalyst because it forced me to make a decision. Whereas before that moment, I was able to, being a bit of a shapeshifter and chameleon and having, at the time I didn't realize, but a lot of karmic awareness or wounds or whatever you want to call it around, if you stick your head up too high, bad stuff happens. So it's better to blend in. It's better to kind of play the game and move through life. So I did that very well.
Stay in the thicket, don't come out in the open.
Yeah.
You know, and that's unfortunately the way things were for quite some time because people were just not accepting of people who lived outside the boundaries of their particular belief system and how they thought things should be. And yet here you were facing the choice of, oh, do I want to be a free, sovereign human being with free agency and control my life and who I'm, what I am? Or do I step back into this controlled environment and try to fit into a mold that I know I don't fit and would be miserable in if I tried to, right? Because that's really the bottom line. So why would you want to do that? And unfortunately, many are forced to face that and go through horrific, traumatic experiences in the process internally.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
Right? Because that's got to be excruciating emotionally facing whether those that you love and had loved you, supposedly, are suddenly questioning whether they do or not. right? And that unconditional love aspect, man, that had to have been just tough. And I hope that our listeners and viewers can, you know, kind of sit with that for a minute and just imagine what it would be like if you had to face that yourself for whatever reason. Doesn't have to be about your sexuality, just in the things that you like or want to do in life or a direction you want to take, and knowing that if you did, then you would face expulsion potentially from your nuclear family.
Yeah, and it wasn't only my nuclear family. There were also, you know, friends, university friends, school friends, sure. the whole shebang. But obviously the family is the more difficult, because that kind of feels like you're, like my security, like where I've come from, my ancestors. And you know, if there was a complete clean cut and see you later, bye, it's a little bit like, wow, like I'm by myself in this world. Like I got there's no one to go to, kind of thing, you know. And so that was difficult. That was quite a difficult process, and it took it was a whole multi-year process that I went through. But I definitely,
what are some of the key elements, what are some of the key realizations or ways that you learned how to navigate with others in that process that allowed your life to flow more easily? And I realize it probably didn't for some time, yet there were moments where it's just like, okay, I got through that one, right?
Yeah, so I think the first thing, first of all, for me was the realization, and this was the biggest lesson that came in right at the beginning of my awakening process, was self-acceptance. And it was, you know, a lot of the people that came into my life said, don't even worry about self-love. Like we just get to self-acceptance. That's the first step, right? And so I was faced with, you know, a lot of self-hatred. I had to really go through a process of self-inquiry to go, what's actually true for me? And what is stuff that I've bought in, which other people have told me? And so one of the things that I did was I stepped away from the religious institution that I was a part of, because I realized I was just a part of it because that's what my family had told me that I should do. And I realized I was just going through the motions. I was like, I don't actually have a connection to anything in this faith at all. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to step away. I'm going to allow myself to go through my own natural process. And if there is truth, alignment, aliveness in that, then I will naturally choose that. And that would be a much more powerful decision rather than me just being there because I should be there. Right? So that was quite a significant.
There are certain elements of life, I suppose, that, you know, especially with parents and family and things like that, you need to show up and be there for, just because you're you and you're part of them. Of course. Yet there's that feeling of disconnectedness when you're in that place. What are the kinds of things that you faced with, was it an open kind of conversational type of things, or was it just something that everybody kind of kept their mouths closed and then just kind of gradually accepted who you are once you had that self-acceptance for yourself?
It was different for different people. So with my family, I did have a conversation with my immediate family, and then the extended family found out through my immediate family, and they were all, you know, different processes that some took years to fully, you know, anchor. But what was really powerful, like even with the, you know, like the difficult relationship for me was with my mother, was about 3 months before she passed over, we went to this beautiful nursery. And I actually bought a bonsai, which is still, I've still got it. It's still alive. It's so resilient. The thing is, it can't die.
Yeah, they live forever.
They live forever, right? And we had this very beautiful conversation where she did, you know, she shared with me, she says, I, even though I don't agree with that way of living, because she saw, I guess, the gay culture and gay life as being a unhealthy way of living, and what I had to share with her was that just because I'm attracted to men, that doesn't mean that I align with that culture, right? Although I did go in and explore certain elements of it to find out for myself actually what's true or not true for me. Right. And as my,
which is the only way you can do it. You can't explore something from the outside and have any kind of, you know, visceral experience to determine what's true for you.
Exactly. And through my own natural process, I realized a lot of it I don't agree with at all. And, you know, have found my own natural way of being in that. But what I realized was that me being able to love another person, regardless of what body they're in, there is no issue with that. Like it's when there is a genuine love and it care and kindness and a true connection, then whatever body the other being is in is irrelevant, recognizing that I'm not my body anyway. So I was already starting to realize like my worldview was rapidly shifting in that I was not identifying as a physical body and my personality as much. I was realizing, oh, this is just something that I have to give me an experience in this material plane that I will let go of, and the memories that I cultivate, I will keep. And I could be a woman in another time, or I could, you know, be in some other completely different form, maybe not even in a human form, in some other form. And so my worldview was rapidly changing. And so a lot of these rigid dogmatic belief systems didn't make sense to me as I continued to evolve.
Now, you said something really interesting, that you are not your body, you know, and you are not your mind, right? It's interesting how we put so much importance on the physical body and the form we have. And now, because we didn't know any better for the most part, and those schools of thought that quite honestly are ancient, they lost their meaning, and they lost their, people just didn't pay attention to it because they weren't promoted. What was promoted was the conditional love and the obsession on the body and who you are and what you are and what you do and how you behave. And you got to, you know, there's rules. And as human beings, you know, we know now through science, through quantum physics, that these bodies really aren't there anyway. We're 99% space, and it's the consciousness and how we behave that actually makes the difference. Doesn't matter what body you're in, love is love. And when you feel that, it's undeniable. Why would you want to? It may not fit other people's parameters or belief systems or whatever, you know. But, you know, it's kind of like the live and let live philosophy that we have in the movement that I'm part of. It's the let live part of it. As long as you're happy, why would we want to diminish another person's true happiness? Right? Why would we want to do that? Would we want somebody to do that to us? I don't think so. So how did that evolve, and what were you able to glean from that in order to share with others to kind of elevate their views or maybe help them transcend that physical boundary?
Yeah, so the first thing for me was, again, around moving away from identifying or perceiving reality through my five human senses. And that started quite gently for me, actually. Mm-hmm. So I remember a distinctive moment. One of my first mentors, who was actually she was the head trainer of JP Morgan, actually. And that was actually where my awakening, again, all these weird synchronicities that happened, right? Like one time I was in a meeting with her, and we were talking about, I had some issues with my team, because I was the youngest person, I was the newest person, and I was the supervisor. So it was all sorts of very unhappy. A lot of unhappy, passive aggressive people that I was having to manage. And I needed some help because I didn't have all of the skills that I have now. And anyway, we had a natural connection. And she said to me in the middle of the meeting, I'd love to do your numerology. And I didn't even know what numerology was. And she did it for me.
And to have that come from a corporate trainer too. It was like, what?
It was great. It was really cool. And she did it. She said to me, oh, your life, this is all about self-expression. It's all about communication. It's all, you know, and it was hilarious because all my biggest shadows, you know, difficult to communicate with people, a lot of anxiety, didn't like to be in front of groups of people, would often freeze or my mind wouldn't be able to get the information. And I said, are you sure? Like, that just seems really far out there. Like, I honestly can't see how that is going to happen. Like, it was so beyond my reference of reality. And she said, look, it's in your numbers. So that's what's going to happen, you know? But anyway, as
like astrology as well.
Pretty specific. So I did a lot of work with her, and she actually took me through the emotional freedom technique, which was created by a guy called Dr. Bradley Nelson. And it helped me move a lot of the energetic blocks, particularly in relation to my mother. So she helped me get prepared so that when my mother passed over, I'd done a lot of, dealt with a lot of my closed heart mother issues, all of that stuff, at least a lot of it, not all of it, but a significant amount. And in that process, I started to realize I could start to feel the subtle energy in my body. And I remember she really challenged me once, and I dropped into my body and I asked my being, and I said, what's the truthful answer for me? And I got this very distinctive experience in my body that I realized was a yes, that this is a yes. And I just said to her, it's a yes. Like, there's no doubt in my mind. And she kind of went, oh, whoa, like, you're very certain about that. How could you be so certain? And I said, I just know it's right.
Yeah. And when you sense it in the, you know, that's one thing that's really strange. Our bodies are instruments. We don't know how to tune them, let alone play them well. And we live from our shoulders up most of the time. And when you really get into your body and you learn what it's all about, and the first brain, I mean, you're very in touch with the Aboriginal culture there, and that's where they come from. The first brain, which is the gut, that's where everything's connected, even vibrationally now with quantum physics. And with science, from the anatomy standpoint, there's neurosensors in the gut that we're, you know, now discovering that are there. So all of this actually reflects back to those ancient teachings, and you know, gosh, they were there for a reason anyway, right? So now we're finding that out. I had an interesting experience, kind of like yours, in that with corporate trainers. I was on the board of directors for our chapter, the Arizona chapter of the American Society for Training and Development, international training and development, corporate level, 147 countries, something like that. And I went to a leadership meeting in Crystal City, Virginia, and I was amazed at the number of enlightened people that I met there that were corporate trainers. And it really restored my hope and faith in humanity and what was being done at that level. Because these were folks that worked for JP Morgan, they worked for Allied Signal, Medtronic, Boeing, you know, all of these kinds of huge corporations in developing the instructional design and training for employees. So it's, you know, it's kind of strange, and yet there it is. You wouldn't know it, notice it, until you begin to kind of weave your way through, or somebody like your boss steps up and said, hey, you ever thought about this? Right? So that's really cool. Would that we all had those kinds of mentors in our lives, and maybe we do, we just haven't recognized it yet.
Yeah, I was blown away, because at the same time, I ended up hiring my very first coach, which was specifically to help me with my confidence and communication, because I'd been in that supervisor role. I realized I needed some professional training. And anyway, so I invested in myself, and I ended up hiring this guy that ended up teaching me all about quantum physics and metaphysics and how we create our reality. And a lot of the things that he was teaching me, she would then say in a very similar way, and it blew my mind. It felt like people were playing a trick on me, because I was like, I've never heard of any of this stuff before. And these two people have kind of randomly come into my life, and they're sharing kind of the same thing. And I had to double check, like, do you know that person? Like, because I wasn't sure if they were like colluding behind the scenes, like playing with me or something. I wasn't sure, like
some kind of cosmic conspiracy going on.
Yeah, right? And they
didn't.
But they didn't realize, you know, like yeah, it was some kind of orchestration going on. But it blew my mind. I couldn't believe it. I was like, wow, this is incredible. Like, it really grabbed my attention. I thought I can't ignore this. This is pretty special.
Absolutely. Now, how did that, so with the two of those, then what were the salient points that they shared and how did you see that once that was done? Because that's going to get you to start paying attention and recognize it, the synchronicities and the things, the ancillary stuff that's happening around you. What were some of the kinds of things that happened to edify what they were saying to you?
So I remember my flatmate was also a very important player in this. So actually the very first spiritual book that I received, and all of this happened roughly at the same time, mm-hmm. was a Crion book, who, you know, Crion is a channel. Lee Carroll is the channel. It's been around for a long time, and it was called The New Earth. And I read that book not understanding, I didn't get it at all, but the energy transmission obviously did something to me because I couldn't put it down. I was like, I don't understand what the book is telling me, but I feel like something, I should read this book, like it feels good.
Right.
And after that book with these two mentors, I ended up seeing an advertisement in a newspaper about Reiki. And my flatmate was saying, you know, he was also just sharing about energy, but in a very kind of, you know, wafty, wifty kind of way. And I remember thinking, I feel kind of drawn to do this, but I was like, is this real? Like, can it really work? And then I remember like my rational mind trying to evaluate the risk return ratio. I was like, okay, it's $300, it's 3 days. If it doesn't really work, I guess it's not such a big deal. At least I know then it doesn't work. But if it does work, like, well, what does that mean? And then see the part of my being which has really been a massive support for me in a lot of the decision-making processes that I've made, where I've come to these forks and then I'm at the unknown and I'm like, well, what are you going to do? Is the adventurer, the experimenter, the explorer. And that part of me kicks in and is like, well, it'll be fun. Like, let's just see what happens. Like, it's not always about what you're going to get. Like, just jump in and see what happens. And so that part would come in and override the rational logical part to a certain degree, and then I would feel the excitement. I'd be like, okay, well, I'm just going to do it anyway. And that was a very big experience for me because I got to experience energy, you know, for the first time, really undeniable energy coming into my body.
It could be pretty profound.
Oh, it was huge. It radically changed how I saw the world. It was significant. And then I had another amazing experience where I was doing my third, well, actually two radical experiences. One was I did my second level Reiki training where the channel, the spiritual medium that I was seeing, she was also a Reiki teacher. And I did my second level training with the original, with Makai Yasui. So one of her connections in spirit was him. So I had this Japanese man teaching me Reiki through this woman's body in that old kind of traditional Japanese way of, you know, everything has to be perfect. And, you know, so it was really crumbling my belief systems because I was like, it's definitely not a woman. It's definitely a man, but it's in a woman's body and it's Japanese energy. Like, it was like blowing, you know, like, whoa, what is going on here? So that was a significant experience. And then the next significant experience was when I did my third level of Reiki. I had had an accident with my knee where I damaged my medial ligament, the lemniscus, like all of those very tender ligaments in the knee. And I'd gone to the surgeon and he basically said, you have to have surgery, otherwise you're not going to be able to play sport again. It was like pretty serious, right? Hmm. And I kind of tuned in and I went, do I want to buy into that? Does that feel true? And my guidance was, don't do it. And so a week later, I had my third level Reiki training. I went in and I said to the teacher, do you think that I could heal my knee? Like, would that be possible? So over the whole 3 days, the whole course, you know, a lot of the practice sessions were all on my right knee. So I'd walked in with crutches. And also I was still employed at JP Morgan at the time. And everyone there knew, like, oh, well, you were on crutches and you had the significant accident. It's going to take a long time. And then on Monday, I walk into the office completely fine, right? So now people are like, well, what were you?
What happened?
Yeah. What happened? So I had some meetings with some of quite senior managers that were like, please explain, like, what's going on? So I told them about Reiki. I told them about energy. And I did some attunements on them because they were like, well, okay, like give us an experience. Like,
yeah, let me see. Right. Show me.
Show me. So anyway, I did do some attunements on a couple of them. And basically Spirit said to me, you are moving into a trajectory where you can't be in this reality anymore. And it's the people in this organization, they are choosing a certain trajectory and basically where you're heading is not in alignment. So you will need to leave that environment, or if you choose not to, there's going to be some pretty significant conflict that happens. Like, it's going to be quite diabolical. They didn't tell me what would happen, but they just said, our recommendation is that you get out of there. You've got about 6 months to leave.
Yeah, and traditionally, those that do or are in communication with, let's say, a greater intelligence, it's subtle. There's just these little prompts and warnings and things like that. It's not forceful. It's like that still small voice that, you know, was spoken of in the book that most religions adhere to, and yet may not practice all that much. And yet it's still a reality, and you've experienced it. And I'm sure others have too. One of the things that kind of spurred my memory, I was a little bit younger than you, and I met a woman that was trained in the Huna way.
Oh, beautiful.
And she was giving a workshop in Prescott, Arizona, and I showed up early because that's when all the cool stuff usually happens anyway. It's just a one-on-one time, right, before everybody else shows up. Well, we had this 40 by 40 foot room that she was going to do her demonstration in. She had me stand in one corner, and she was going to demonstrate the size of the aura when you're in the past, present, and future. And she did it through the use of dowsing rods. And so I'm like, and I had never, it was kind of like you. It's like, I don't know, my logic mind was like, how the heck do you do that? Well, so she had me stand, eyes closed, and she said, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to have you go in the past, and I'm going to walk over to the other corner, and I'm going to walk towards you, and where the rods open, I'm going to stop, have you open your eyes, we'll mark the spot, and I'm going to go back and do the future and then the present. And I'm like, okay, cool. So the past and future both were about 6 feet in front of me. And she picks up a rock and puts it in my hand. She said, now, you know, she had me really go into those events and try to create all that so I'd really be there emotionally. Then the rock. And so I'm focusing on that. She gets about two steps in from the other side of the room and the rod's open. So there was a difference between 40, from 6 feet to almost 50 feet. Just by being in the present. That's what the rods show. Now, if you, you know, it may seem like a pseudoscience, but people have found water using dowsing rods for millennia. So there is some science behind that. And we know our bodies are electromagnetic energy and they expand and contract depending on where we are at emotionally and where our focus of attention is. So that showed me is, wow, imagine if we could all just be in the present moment, how large your energy would be and the kind of effect it would have on others, right? Because when you're in the present, you're just kind of calm, cool, collected, able to, you know, deal with things and not get all out of, get all wonky, is what I like to say, right?
Yeah.
And so these kind of experiences for many are kind of rare, but yet they happen. So going from there, how did you progress?
Yeah, so that was a powerful initiation because I knew I needed to leave the corporate world. I had absolutely no idea what I was going to be doing. So I said to Spirit, great, I'm okay to leave, but what do I do? I just got silence, right? Like nothing. So then getting towards the end of the year, because I knew the deadline that they said was the end of the year, right? So we're now in September. I still had no idea what I was going to be doing. I went to a retreat, and it was partly to support me in the healing of the grief around the passing of my mother, because she had passed over probably about, it was 3 months
That's
before
a tough
that.
Thing.
So that was a big
thing for anybody to go through.
Yeah, very intense and powerful. I mean, I received a lot of initiations in death and all sorts of stuff. That's another whole story. But staying on track.
One thing to prepare, it's another to actually go through it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And then the other part of the retreat was my, again, the innate knowing was just tell people honestly where you are in your life. Like, you know, you need to move forward. You don't know what you need to do. Just see what happens. And so I did. And the facilitator of the retreat at the end said, hey, I'm just feeling to invite you around to my house. Like, let's have a meeting. I said, okay, what are we going to talk about? He said, I don't know, but just come and meet me. So I did. And at the end of the year, he just asked me, like, what do you do? And what are your skills? And what can you do? And I just thought we were having a conversation. At the end of the conversation, he said, I'd like to employ you. Would you like to work for me? Right? So he was an inspirational speaker. He ran events and everything. And he basically said, would you like to run my business? And that was a huge step up, because I'd been in corporate, you know, your skill set is very narrow, it's very niched. Very, very, very skilled in what you do, but running a business is a whole.
I can't imagine who, me? Game. Really? Oh my God.
Yeah. And so I, you know, and this guy, in terms of how he was the opposite to that other world that I'd been in, which was no controls, you know, he's a visionary, heart centered. Follow the intuition to whatever degree, just make it happen. I don't care how you make it happen. Like, you can do whatever you want as long as you don't screw it up. So right. it was the opposite of how I'd been. And so for me, taking responsibility and not having someone to go and check my work or no controls, like none of it. It was like being thrown into a completely different reality. And I went through an enormous initiation to.
And yet, because of your work ethic that's internal, right, you have this self-management program that you, and I think most of us do, right? When we're given the freedom to do things, we want to do our best. And that, and sometimes we don't know what that's going to be because we don't know what all we're going to be expected to do. And yet here we are. Right, we have the opportunity. Now what?
yeah. And it was extraordinary. I learned so many powerful lessons through that. One lesson that I will share, because I think this is a golden lesson that a lot, like pretty much every person will have to go through, was when I moved from corporate to working with him, I took a 50% pay cut. It was a pretty significant pay cut, but it felt true for me to say yes. And it got to a point where I had done a lot of, you know, I learned how to basically run the business, and I was probably doing 3 to 4 people's jobs, right? Because one of my gifts was efficiency, flow, project management. I could have multiple moving parts moving and know exactly where every bit was, and everything could just flow and tinker along. But not, I didn't realize that not everyone could do that. And so I undervalued myself, right? And so I realized, oh, actually, this isn't a good deal actually for me. Like, the amount of energy and what I'm putting in here is worth a lot more. So I went to him and I said to him, look, I really feel I deserve a pay rise. Like, I think I'm being underpaid, you know? And he looked at me and he says, come back into my office when you've decided that you're worth the pay rise. Why are you asking me for a pay rise? And I was a bit confused. Like, I was like, but you're the one that's paying me. Like, shouldn't you decide if I have the pay rise? And he said, no, like you've got it all the wrong way around. Like, you need to decide and you haven't decided yet. So anyway, I went away and I spent some time really sitting with that. And then I realized, oh, I'd given my power away. I was hoping that he would see the value in me, but I hadn't seen my own value. And so what happened was I got to a place where I really did see my value. And I came into his office going, I'm choosing to have a pay rise. And if you don't like it, I'm going to leave. Like, it was that energy, right? Like, it, right. As in, there isn't going to be a negotiation.
You went to the other end of the spectrum.
Yeah. I was like, I'm going to be cool with that. If he doesn't see the value in me, then I will find someone that does.
Right.
And he could feel that because I asked for my pay to double, basically. So, and I could see in his eyes, he was like, oh shit, like, what have I unleashed here? Like, I was expecting him maybe a 10 grand pay rise. He wants a double pay rise. And so anyway, he then basically said, okay, let's set some KPIs. And, you know, when you hit certain milestones, great, let's do that. So he accepted it. And that was a very powerful lesson for me because I realized actually my own value and self-worth and what I'm delivering is actually up to me. It's not up to other people.
Now, did your production also increase as a result?
Well, what interestingly happened was that Spirit actually kicked me out of that job probably about 4 months after that moment, which I didn't realize. So I didn't have the opportunity to go through the full process of that. And it was a complete left field experience. Like, it was not, I didn't see it coming at all. Like, it was one of those weird cosmic changes that happened and it was very unexpected. So I didn't go through the full process. I did end up getting a partial pay rise, but I didn't go through the full process of meeting all the KPIs to then qualify for that.
Well, as you've noted, it wasn't about the pay raise.
No,
it wasn't. It was about your boundary.
Definitely. And that was a significant lesson for me because a lot of the shadow challenges in my life have been on the suppressive side. You know, what I would call, you know, the wounded feminine, you know, powerlessness, hopelessness, despair, mm-hmm. Lack of self-worth, all of those. So all of those energies I've had to work through, you know. Another one is...
We all do.
Yeah. But I guess we're, you know, some people seem to have different challenges.
Some of us can. Some of us take many lifetimes to do so.
Right. Yeah, right. Yeah. But anyway, a big one for me was also feeling like I needed permission from others in order to be capable, right? Mm-hmm. So it was almost like I was looking for permission from others to then say, yeah, you are capable.
And I find that a lot in my, as a transformational life coach, and I've got a couple of master's degrees in business, so I deal with both things, and of course KPIs are all part of that. What I find, though, is that the same kind of thing exists. People are looking for permission to do what it is they want to do, and it's really difficult for them to give themselves permission because it's not something they were trained or programmed or taught that they could do. And once that permission is granted, and of course, you know, it's not me giving them permission, it's helping them to give themselves permission, right? Just say, yeah, go for it, right? And they're like, okay, cool. And boom, they go. And the amazing things that happen as a result of that are unbelievable to most people because they don't give themselves permission to do so. Right? And by and large, it seems like our whole society is in that, a lot of our society is in that place still. You know, look at the narrative that just happened. And how people kowtowed and hid and ran and got afraid of each other and separated and sequestered and did all these things that were a violation of spirit. Right. And now that that's over, people are coming back together and they're saying, wait a minute, we missed each other. This doesn't feel right anymore. We need to be together. We need, and yet, silver lining, right? Kind of like what you went through. The silver lining was the obsession on self-hygiene and sequestration in the trickle down of the behavior modification. It always goes internal. And so people had the opportunity to really self-examine. Who am I really? What do I believe in? What do I want to stand for? How, what do I want in life? You know, what do I truly want to be and do? And so we have these choices that have come up, and many have said, hey, woohoo, remote working, I can live anywhere now. Yeah, that too.
Remote viewing and remote working.
Yeah, exactly. So, and this spawned a whole new shift in the workplace and how people are living, where they're living, and the incomes that are available. And so now these people that have become empowered are saying, hey, wait a minute, what else can we do now? Can we work collectively in order to affect change? And I see that happening. And it is so, it just feels good.
I agree.
I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know that anybody knows where we're going to be 5 years from now. But we're going to be there, and it's going to be different than now because we're making efforts. We're having conversations like this that are opening the door for people to kind of look, peer into others' lives and say, hey, wait a minute, I'm kind of like that. Well, I go through that, and they did this. Maybe I can try that and see how it works for me. And so we kind of give them permission to explore themselves and see what kind of life that they can truly create. Because, you know, like Napoleon Hill had stated, whatever the mind of man can conceive and believe, it can achieve. Or woman, to make it, right? Or whomever, you know, there doesn't even have to be a pronoun in there, except that whatever they can conceive and believe, they can achieve. And that's actually true. Now, it, as you've become aware, there's a discipline to that. So what kind of discipline did you find was applicable for you?
Yeah, I agree. The discipline, the focus, and being clear on what it is that I'm saying yes to, which I would say is a vision, or just say a loose holding of a reality that I'm saying yes to, has been essential. So for me, again, this is not static and this has changed over time. So there's no one right way. What worked for me 5 years ago doesn't work for me now. It's continually changing and evolving. But some of the things...
As you do.
Yeah, exactly. So some of the things that were most useful for me, different meditation practices, really, really helpful. So again, to reclaim the energy that I didn't realize I'd done, enmeshed myself into the outside world. I found various different meditation techniques really helping me kind of pull my energy back in. So again, it's like in the beginning part of the hero's journey when we realize, oh wow, I'm living in this reality that isn't really right for me. But what is right and what's not right? Well, I need to kind of get out of that and come back inside to find me. And so the beginning part of the practices was stillness, quietness, a lot of work around the heart for me, because my heart was like a bank vault. I even had a few healers that said, wow, it's like, you know, you've got like a reserve bank, you know, concrete, platinum.
Need some thermite to get into it, right?
Yeah, yeah. It was like, you know, and even in the beginning, they were like, we're just going to put some holes in there. Just feel that. Like, we're not going to get rid of it because it's, you know, it would be too... The experience and the shift would be so extreme that you wouldn't know how to be with that. So we're going to do a gradual
baby steps, Bob.
Yeah. So for me, a lot around the heart, so much protection, you know, a lot of protection. So the practices that could help me to be in my heart, start to cultivate love, start to feel love for myself, that was, you know, huge, enormous, and many, many, many years and different layers of that. Then there were other practices like building concentration and focus, because again, like television, all of the distractions kind of fracture that. So it's difficult to, you know, to be present. As you say, when I'm present, my field naturally opens up. What I notice is that all of the solutions and ideas that are relevant in the moment naturally come. I don't have to think of work anything out. They just come in. But in order for that to happen, I've got to know how to be present, be in my heart grounded, and in that receiving space. So again, moving out of left brain over rationalization, trying to work everything out, being too logical, move into more of an intuition, feeling, receptivity space. So that was huge practices, all of those practices to kind of find that balance. Then getting into my body, which is all the shadow work, you know, like facing, like, you know, what is it that I'm not aware of and what is it that I'm carrying from my ancestors, all the karmic imprints that I brought in from other times, and to create a nice home inside, like a home that I feel good in. You know, my body is my temple in this life and I want to look after it. So a lot of self-care practices, get massage, go to the sauna, eating organic, healthy food, you know, all of these things, which is the restorative, the nourishing aspects, which again, isn't representative in our society because everyone's on this go, 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 you know, nonstop
wheel. Yeah, fast food and muck enlightenment.
Yeah, I like that. That's great. I haven't heard that one before. So, you know, basically it's like implementing practices that are the opposite to what is normal in the mainstream world, pretty much. And so all of these different things over time, you know, as I moved on further down the track, it was more around learning about alchemy and energetics and how to consciously create all of that.
Let me ask you this. In the process, did it become, or did you become aware that this was actually a more of a sense of normality than the other, right? That this is actually present and available and had been there prior to, you know, the distractions, that you kind of return to the space that was naturally there for you.
Absolutely. And the biggest difficulty for me, which was interesting, this may be different for other people, I'm not sure, was the fear that I would be unrelatable to the people in my life. And I had a bit of a challenge to go, if I really allow myself to move into this new space, because what I was observing was that people were leaving my life like hotcakes, right? And I kind of knew that that was okay. Like it wasn't a bad thing, but
was the world you tried to fit into and it didn't fit. So it was going to gradually dissipate.
Yeah. And it
was the normal process.
It is. And I was
being rather excruciating and, you know, full of fear and angst and things of that nature, because you do care, you develop relationships and you want to be cool about it and for everybody else to as well.
Yeah, that's right. And so it was actually just being okay, becoming okay that my world was crumbling and that it was actually a good thing, which I was reasonably okay with. It was probably learning like how to be okay and not knowing, like that was difficult. Like in the deathing of life, that was what I, you know, I would feel anxiety. I would be like, but I want to know what's happening. And of course, spirit doesn't, you know, that information is not always available. And to learn to become comfortable in the uncomfortable, like that took a lot of goes for me to then really know, wow, okay, so this is actually just part of the process. There's nothing to be worried about. I am actually supported. Mm-hmm. Synchronicities will come in. I don't need to know everything. But that took a bit of time. That wasn't easy.
Do you think that process, because everything's frequency oriented, right? Harmonics, we propel, we attract, you know, the part of how we think, feel, that's all vibrational, the emotions and things of that nature. Do you think that also that mechanism, that infinite intelligence that manages it all, let's say, for lack of a better, then helps to craft those new coming relationships, the flow that's different in that unknown, that once you move into those or those processes, sometimes they're excruciatingly fun because they're not so fun when you're going through them, but afterwards it's like, woo-hoo, right? And yet there's this elevation that takes place. Do you find that in that process that it became the unknown and the fear of it, which most people have? I think we all do to some degree. Even, you know, the top three fears are not, you think fear of death would be on the top of the list, right?
Public speaking.
Public speaking, exactly. And then divorce. That's number three. So, you know, if you've stood up in front of people and been divorced, then the third should be a charm, right? You've conquered it.
Yeah.
And there is no death.
That's,
you know,
right.
My experience as a teenager, I prayed to know what truth was, and I was willing to die for it. Well, be careful what you ask for, because I found myself in the white light the following week through a short experience and realized I could still think, so I wasn't dead. And then when I eventually got my marching orders for this life and came back into my body, it was like, wow, right? And you realize, oh, we're all cosmic consciousness condensed into form, becoming aware. And this process is that becoming aware of the nature within, right? And then the outer world reveals that it adheres to that as well. Right? If you ever change or check to see, if you want to know where you're at internally, look what's going on outside of you. And that will tell you exactly what's going on. You may not want to hear it or see it. It'll be there.
Completely. Yeah. I've always, you know, when I've been working with my clients over the years, we always use physical reality manifestations as the litmus test to how integrated are you? Where are you really at? Where are you in relation to your vision or the reality that you say that you would love? But then what are you actually creating? What are the fears? What are the resistances and limitations? And sometimes it's hard to see them. And so physical reality actually serves a very beautiful purpose in that way, if it's used in its correct function, you know?
Absolutely.
Don't take it personally.
Everything's not necessarily going to happen immediately. You know, as I said in our pre-chat, you know, it took me 47 years to find the place that I belong and stepping into the executive director position of the Live and Let Live Global Peace Movement. You know, I felt like I stepped into destiny. And part of what facilitated that was an interview on One World and the New World. So, you know, all these things line up, and as long as you step into them in the freedom and without expectation. I think you've said that before too. You just have to show up and be available, vulnerable, and fearless. Those two are kind of synonymous, you know, and things transpire. It's just how it all works. Now, on a very practical and pragmatic level, which you've kind of been giving some indications to, how would you advise those that maybe are listening or maybe that will be listening and find themselves stuck or at least in a, you know, contemplative place? What are the simple practical applications that they might be able to tune into within themselves or questions they might ask of themselves to help the process along a little bit?
Yeah, really good question. So the first thing for me is to become aware of either the emotions or energy, because they are the clues to the constructs or the beliefs or sometimes the more difficult things to really perceive, but they will offer a spiral into them. So, for example, if someone's experiencing grief or sadness, right, you can then ask yourself, okay, well, what does this emotion mean? Like, what, like, if it was to communicate something to me, what does this mean? And in my discoveries, it's usually around loss. I've lost something. I had something and now I don't have it, right? And so it can help people to understand, you know, how are they perceiving reality, and to start to take responsibility for often beliefs and ideas that they've inherited from other people. You know, and so again, that self-inquiry, that contemplative process going back inside yourself is the way that we can then start to explore that. And again, often just bringing awareness to something can start the process of the alchemy. You know, like there's been so many examples for me where I've just often gone in there, not really knowing, but I've just gone in there with a bit of curiosity of, you know, well, what's the truth about this?
I think that's a key word, curiosity.
Yeah, yeah. Curiosity and not taking things personally, you know? Mm-hmm. So for example, one of the biggest difficulties in being able to transform a lot of the egoic aspects is the fear of what if that thing that I'm trying to find is actually true about me? And that creates the resistance to actually go there, right? It's a massive block for a lot of people. But if I go, you know what? What if everything is just, it's just going to give me an experience, right? So whether I experience shame, pride, whatever, it doesn't actually matter. It's just going to give me an experience, right? And it's got nothing to do with who I truly am. But mm-hmm. It's like being in a fun park and you go on a ride and you have a certain experience and then, you know, you can get off the ride. But if you are kind of stuck on a ride and you can't get off the ride, right? One of the things is going, okay, well, I'm not that ride. This isn't who I am. It's just offering an experience. And then because I'm not taking it personally, I can bring curiosity into it and go, well, why am I attaching or aligning myself with this so strongly? You know, what's binding me to this, and what is it that I can acknowledge within myself that then can create some freedom in that? And usually it's the releasing of the energy first, because the emotion and the energy is what makes the construct feel real, which mm-hmm. is why if someone, for example, at a very deep level believes they are unworthy, saying affirmations of I am worthy just doesn't work. It won't work. In my experience, it doesn't work. You've got to release the energy first. Right? So going into the body, clearing it at that somatic level, and then challenging through the self-image of how you perceive yourself to go, well, is it really true that I'm unworthy? But you can only really do that once you've dissolved at least some of the energy. And for me, the easiest way to do that is to go, but who am I truly in relation to universal consciousness? And is that self-image of me really, really true? Or is it just an experience that I'm having, which is great. There's nothing wrong with having an experience, but it's not really who I am.
Temporary and transitory.
Yeah.
And we all have those, and to just embrace them. You know, it's kind of like meditation that people think, I've got to control my mind. Well, that's not really what you're doing. What happens is you learn how to just watch your thoughts and then choose which ones you want to entertain, or any at all, right? Then you can choose how you think, and then you can replace what I call stinking thinking, you know,
I love it,
with more congruent thinking that edifies that presence within you. And sometimes, you know, like you were mentioning the unworthiness, you know, learn how to accept compliments, right? Because usually there are those that will compliment you for something. And the first thing that one who's feels unworthy will do is they'll lower their head, or they'll say something in defiance or argument toward the compliment they were just given. Right. Yeah. So being able to watch that behavior and see, and that, you know, when you're in it, you don't really see that unless you've got somebody that's on the other side that just gave you the compliment that can say, hey, why did you just do that? I just gave you a compliment. Right. So that's kind of watching out for each other in a way, and just being caring and concerned, compassionate, and maybe even a little empathetic toward the other person to really help them in that moment, to say, hey, it's, you know, it's okay. I want to care, you know, I want to show you have more value than you think you do.
Definitely. And I think this is the value of relationships and community, because we learn through the relating with other people, you know, because every relationship is a unique experience. And even the same person, that relationship can change over time as well. So nothing's static. Absolutely. And for me, it's like, wow, I learned the most about myself in relating with others. And that's why community is so important, with having people around you where they care and love you and they wish the best for you. And in that area of safety and trust, there's more of a willingness to then receive feedback or insight of like, hey, are you aware of that? Whereas in the mainstream world, everyone's, you know, either king of the hill or bottom of the pit or some version in between, mm-hmm. and defending or attacking everyone, trying to get somewhere, trying to do it all themselves, and then wondering why everyone's so stressed, depleted, unhappy, in tension,
right,
to varying degrees, you know, because there's a lack of community, there's a lack of trust.
You'll have this, and you know, beyond the fact that all we want is to love and be loved, we're all in relationships on the ocean of emotion, seeking safe harbor. And when we can offer that safety net, just by being who we are and being caring and compassionate towards others, the community builds itself.
Yeah.
Truly does. Cool. I really appreciate the time I've had with you, Nicholas, and the insight and understanding and wisdom that you've shared with our audience and with me. I've really appreciated that. And thank you so much.
Yeah, it's been an honor. And I love conversing with you. I love your mystical and magical and beautiful, very succinct little sentences that you drop in that just feel, I've heard some of these before in the way that they are delivered, and it's easy to remember, which is always powerful. And so thank you for inviting me, and also just wanting to thank the audience. Thank you for being with us. And, you know, we would love to hear your experience. And if you have any questions or anything, we, you know, get in touch, and we'd love to connect and communicate.
And I'll have your contact information below in the description as well for those who want to explore it.
Amazing. Wonderful.
Namaste and in La Ketch. Thank you all for tuning in and watching this episode of One World in a New World. I'm your host, Zen Benefiel, and I will see you next time.